This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Coming up next, conversations on human rights with Speak Up, Korerotia, here on Plains FM.
E nā mana, e nā reo, e nā hō e whā. Tēnā koutou katoa. No mai ki tēne hōtaka. Speak up. Korerotia. Tune in as our guests speak up, sharing their unique and powerful experiences and opinions. And may you also be inspired to speak up when the moment's right.
Ko speak up korerotia tēnei. Ko Sally Carlton aho. Today we're talking about activating the city. There's been a real run of events and activations taking place in North Otahi Christchurch in the last few weeks. They've all been seeking to connect people within Christchurch to city space and people within Christchurch to each other. And so it seemed like a great time to have a bit of a korero about this topic. We've got three guests today who are all going to introduce themselves and tell us about the work, the mahi that they're doing in this particular space. Ryan, well, perhaps we'll start with you. You've been on the show before, but it's great to have you back talking on a different topic.
Thank you. I'm one of the founders of Get Filler, which has been around for 10 and a half years now, and I'm the day-to-day director. We do a mix of events and installations in the city, and some quite short-term, and some like the Dance-O-Mat or the Super Street Arcade have been there for quite a few years. Our focus has been on the central city in Christchurch, and at the moment we've got 17 installations live in the central city.
That's fantastic, and I'm really looking forward to talking about some of the more recent ones, or some of the older ones as well, as we go through.
Cool.
Cheryl, perhaps we'll go with you next.
Kia ora koutou, ko Cheryl Doig toko ingoa, no otatahi aho, no ako otatahi, Learning City Christchurch, toku mahi. So I'm one of the directors or trustees of Ako Otatahi, Learning City Christchurch, and that's a charitable trust in the city that's really focused on creating learning connections across the city and exploring the idea of citizens at the heart of learning. So not just schools and tertiary organisations, but community and business all working together with a focus on equity, access and innovation. So we do some projects, but we also run learning days that I'm sure we'll be talking about later.
Fantastic, thanks. And our final guest, Erica.
Kia ora, ngā mihi nui, ko Waio, ko Guangzhou Tokurohi, ko Baiyunshan Tokumangwa, ko Zhujiang Tokuawa, ko Liang Tokuhapu, ko Nop Tokuwhanau, no Haina Aho, ko Erika Tokuingoa, ko Otatahi e Noho Ana O. Kia ora. Dajia hao, my name is Erica. I come from Guangzhou, China, and grew up in Auckland, Tāmaki Makaurau, and moved to Christchurch 8 years ago. My background is in architecture. My relationship with the city is being the Christchurch ambassador because I'm very passionate about the city. My professional role that I created for myself is experience curator. I use my architecture skills to weave in, design and curate meaningful experiences. And who am I? I am a multi-potentialite, a person with multiple passions and also a mum to a one-year-old. And I've been lucky enough to be a volunteer at Gap Filler when I first came to Otatahi Christchurch and also involved in Learning City with Cheryl and supporting Learning Days. Kia ora.
Many, many hats you wear, Erica. When you say that you are an experience curator and you curate people's experiences, what exactly do you mean by that?
So when we think about a curator, we can't not think about a curator of an exhibition. If you think about an exhibition, you've got multiple, you know, pieces of artwork that are designed, drawn, or executed by artists, and the curator is to help put it in a collection for people to experience. So applying that to how we experience the city and how we engage with different spaces and different people, I use the same thinking around curating different things and connecting the dots so people can see it or experience it collectively.
Very interesting. I've always wondered what your title means exactly. Okay, so as we start off our kōrero then, activating the city, what exactly do we mean by that? How can a city be activated? Can a city be activated?
From my perspective, absolutely it can be activated. And if it's not activated, it's in a place of inertia and lack of growth. Activation for me, from a learning city perspective, means a sense of engagement and belonging. And it also means a place where place, people and purpose are all connected. Activation comes from the people and the sharing of power.
Yeah, I guess I see the term used a lot in our field these days. And I think for a lot of people using the word activate, they don't necessarily distinguish it from just activity, having stuff happening. And I think that's certainly part of it. You want to, you know, we want cities and public spaces where there's a bit of a buzz and there's stuff happening. But yeah, I guess for a while now we've been teasing out what's the difference maybe between activate and just activity. And Gepfiller comes back to this sort of definition of, well, you can run a big event in a city and get a lot of people and a lot of things happening, and then everyone goes home. And if you want to get that activity again, you have to create another big event. That, in my mind, that's creating activity. That's not activating the city. So something about activating for me is creating the kind of potential for a more sustainable or ongoing activation, whether that means empowering communities so that you might help them run one event, and then that community group can, you know, self-run its own events because you've built some capability and capacity, or some of our, you know, longer term installations in the city where we build it once and then that becomes kind of an invitation for all sorts of people to use it off their own backs and create that kind of regular activity happening.
It's almost like those smaller everyday things as much as those big scale things.
In my mind, certainly.
For me, it's really about filling it with life. And the emphasis is really around the verb, and just listening to what Ryan is saying, the idea of activities that could also be, you know, filled with plant life and life of all its form. And the immediate thought of the work that the Green Lab does, you know, they can fill the space with plant life, and that's also activating, but in a slower pace where people can appreciate that slowness of it growing and its response to its environment. And I really want to touch on that emotional and physical response that that life has with the space.
I was just thinking about what you were saying, Erica, and the idea of activation being a systems approach, and just reflecting on the conversation about one flap of a butterfly's wings can create a major storm on a different part of the world. Sometimes you actually don't know whether something has made a difference, because people will go away from an activity and nothing might happen, or nothing might happen for a while, and there's thinking or there's follow-up conversation. And sometimes in the learning city space, we talk about activating, of accepting the nudge of someone else that takes on a next stage of a project because it's got some purpose or meaning for them. So, yeah. I agree, it's an ongoing, not just a single event, but sometimes it takes a while to emerge, and you just, because it's complex, you don't know necessarily what that might look like. You just got to keep poking and prodding the system.
In some ways, there's not much more of a passive experience on one level than reading a book or watching a film. On the other hand, those are often the most powerful things that linger with you for years and transform your lives and push you in new directions and all sorts. So yeah, it would be a real shame if we lost all of those other layers, the word activate, and just focused on movement.
Yeah, it's all about opening people's eyes, minds and hearts to the city rather than movement.
You've spoken about the role that people obviously play in this. Is it a two-way thing then between the city and the people, or are there other parties involved in that as well? I'm thinking here maybe government and or funders, for example.
if I take Learning City as an example, it's a grassroots movement. And so that's about the rise of citizen power and the voice of the everyday citizen being heard. And that's got a critical role in making a difference. And at the same time, you've got your big, slow government departments and systems that sometimes can get in the way and sometimes help. And so the interaction between the two is a critical part of that work. And so where you can get some sort of government or funder that is a partner in the process, not just a funder and a checker off, I think that makes a real difference. So partnership is key.
Erica, given your background with architecture, I'm wondering if architecture makes a difference here as well in terms of the actual construction of physical space and the way things are designed.
Yeah, the thing that comes to mind is Winston Churchill's quote that always stays with me is, "We shape our buildings, thereafter they shape us." And it is a full cycle and ever-evolving journey. Reflecting back on the last 10 years in Christchurch, you know, we've been through so much, the earthquake, the shooting and COVID, and what really stays constant is that change of our environment and that constant readapting and learning and growing. And so architecture does actually hold a lot of, you know, history and also a sense of, you know, belonging that actually helps us to reshape our relationship with the place.
Fantastic answer, Erica. Anyone else want to add anything to that?
I'll make a comment as a person who grew up in Christchurch and lives in Ōtautahi, because to me they're different cities. Still a long journey to be had, but if you walk through the city and you can see the manifestations and recognition of mana whenua, that to me is the sense of belonging that is critical in terms of the connection with city. I think that's a really important point for me in this journey.
Yeah, I think that's been one of the most exciting developments since the quakes, was having mana whenua as statutory partners on all the big government blueprint anchor projects. So there's a much more visible presence there. I got into whatever the field is that I'm in, the sort of stuff that we do, through performance. So I spent many years in theater, but the kind of underlying discipline is performance studies, where we look at all of our everyday behaviors as social roles that we're playing. And so sort of bring that lens to the city about who can you be in what spaces, what sort of roles are you required to play in some instances, but invited or allowed to play in other instances. And so I absolutely believe architecture, landscape architecture, design in all of its, you know, that the environments we're in make us feel like we can or can't be, you know, certain aspects of ourselves can manifest or not. And I feel like that's kind of still the core principle behind a lot of our interventions or installations, is how can we tease out some of those behaviors or roles that people might secretly like to play but don't really get the opportunity.
Very nice. I think we might have our first song here. Cheryl, you've chosen for us Dave Dobbin's Welcome Home. And I think that probably ties in really nicely with what you were saying there before about Ōtautahi and Christchurch, if you want to maybe elaborate a wee bit more.
Yes, a couple of reasons. One is it has its roots in New Zealand, but also that whole notion of tūranga waiwai is that if you've activated a city and you feel that you belong, then that means you feel safe, you feel free from racism, you feel that you are valued as a person. And so Welcome Home to me epitomises that feeling of, I've landed back here in this place and I belong here.
Ka pai.
Tonight I am feeling for you, under the state of a strange land. You have sacrificed much to be here, therefore the graces I offer my hand. Welcome home, I bid you welcome, I bid you welcome. Welcome home. And
she sings with the mountains and breathes high and high. There's a cloud full into these aisles, just playing chase with the sun. And it's black and it's white.
Speak Up Korero Tia, and today we're talking with Ryan Reynolds of Gapfiller, Erica Austin, who is a Christchurch ambassador and experience curator, and Cheryl Zoig of Learning Cities. The idea for the show came about because there's been a lot happening in Christchurch in the last few weeks, and I thought it would be great to talk through what are some of those projects. How did they come about in terms of the concept, and how have you seen them being played out? Have they been successful, and how do you define success or otherwise?
Ako Otatahi Learning City Christchurch has just hosted a week of what we call Otatahi Learning Days. And so it's a week of celebrating and uncovering some of the learning opportunities that happen across the city. Part of that is if we're focusing on equity, access, innovation as key ways of connecting our city, it's just a good way to bring some ideas together and create a sense of momentum that we can then build on during the year. So that's not the only thing we do, but last week with our learning days, we're more or less the container for those events to happen. We don't run all the events ourselves, and they've varied from Maza talking about the Aroha as a way of dismantling hate in Aotearoa, through to a reading flash mob out at Hornby Hub with 200 students from the Hornby area, through to a cultural narrative walkway. So it's really, really varied. And so part of that is connecting in the long term with breaking down barriers of equity, particular for rangatahi, but not just about that. It's about the learning opportunities so that everyone has access to learning and equity, which we know is an increasing gap. It's bringing the conversations together so that people are working on those initiatives as a group. So during the year, as well as our learning days, we have some other initiatives such as a focus on digital equity, for example, where we've just been bringing people together to have the conversation and then seeing what happens in terms of projects or directions that might take us. The richness of that is if people talk together and they say, I wish I'd met you years ago because actually our work's in common, so let's do some mahi together that's going to make a difference. So that's a powerful part of our work. It's that sort of Connect Lab focus.
Fantastic. And Erica, how about the many, many projects that you've been involved in?
So I was just looking back, the last 10 days I was involved in three different projects. And the first one was Pachakcha Night, which is a global movement celebrating visual storytelling using 20 slides and each slide playing for 20 seconds to succinctly talk about or showcase projects, and then followed by Learning Days and then Open Christchurch. Cheryl's already touched on Learning Days, so I won't repeat that, but I'll talk about Open Christchurch first. It is a one weekend only festival that celebrates exceptional architecture in our city. We opened up 46 different buildings that included, you know, different types and different styles of architecture, along with more than 35 different special activities within those spaces. We partnered with all of the different building partners that are either tenants or owners or kaitiaki of the space to run these special activities. And we had over 130 volunteer shifts that supported all of the building partners that were involved. So in one weekend, we brought together over 12,000 pairs of feet through doors, and it's been an incredible journey. It is built on the director Jessica Holliday's dream for 20 years. And it's so great to be able to realise her dream and make it happen in Ōtautahi. And the other project that I was running was Pachakucha, and it was one of the ways that I could promote Open Christchurch. So we themed the event focused on architecture matters, where we talk about why architecture and design actually matter in our city. And we had a range of different speakers speak to that using the Pachakucha format.
Open Christchurch in particular to me is just a beautiful, beautiful example of what we were saying before about kind of activating in the less physical movement sense, but more in terms of growing connection and the kind of mental activity of giving people a chance to explore, kind of see behind the curtains of the city in a way, see backstage in the places, sometimes people's homes and civic buildings that you don't normally get to go into those spaces. And then you carry that with you forever after. And as you're walking through the city, those become little anchor points and memories and touchstones. Yeah, beautiful gesture.
I noticed as well, Erica, that there's already talk about Open Christchurch 2022. And one of my thinkings was, are you going to try and do the same buildings or add to that retinue as well? Will it be sort of, we've done those ones 2021, we're going to leave them alone or try and open up those ones again?
It's actually a really long process. So we have a building council that we've worked with for over 18 months. So what they do is they come from diverse sort of backgrounds, mostly involved in the construction and architecture industry. And they've drew up over 200 buildings in Christchurch, and we invited 40. And then we also opened up a public nomination of some spaces or places that people are interested in visiting, and hence why the 46 buildings was part of the program. And some of them may opt in next year. Others may be new ones that we invite. We don't know how many would say yes, but hopefully we will have a steady growth over the next few years. I think our target that we've spoke about was around 80 buildings in 5 years' time. Being the program manager for 46 buildings in one weekend was a huge, huge feat. But we piloted this idea of Open Christchurch 2 years ago in 2019, and we opened one building in one weekend, and we had to manage that over 3 months, along with 10 guided walks, and moving that into 46 buildings in one weekend wasn't easy, but hopefully building partners are excited and positive enough to be involved again. This is an annual event, by the way.
And I have to say, all credit to you, Erica, for all of that mahi that you've been involved in the last few weeks, because that is incredible with Learning City, with Open Christchurch and all the other hats that you wear. If I was you, I wouldn't even be still standing. So I think it's an amazing thing that you've done, and full credit to you.
Thank you, kia ora.
And Ryan, Gapfiller's been doing quite a lot in the last few weeks as well.
Yeah. What do you want to talk about?
I want to talk about how very, very impressed I am that you managed to get a play on words with polite force instead of police force, and also not just Ngā Pirihimani or Aotearoa, but Ngā Pirihimanaki. I thought they were two amazing, very clever play on words.
Credit to Regan Stokes for the te reo pun, to kind of carry forward the polite force pun into the reo. I think, that was good. Okay, polite force is our first kind of explicitly performance-based project in quite a while. At its simplest level, it's just kind of our own take or evolution of something like the Central City Ambassadors or Greeters or the... Oh, gosh, what was he called?
The Wizard?
No, not the Wizard, the Town Crier, something like that, although I found him quite intimidating and a bit off-putting. But the idea of, you know, some characters around the city who are smiling and available and making people feel welcome. being a Get Filler project, we do it in a bit more of a playful way. So not only plays on words, but then we're doing kind things for people, carrying around umbrellas and holding doors and, you know, seeing people unload a van full of luggage at the Novotel and we'll just step up and give them a hand or whatever it is. That's nice. Also just trying to facilitate a bit more playfulness and kind of spontaneous social interactions on the street. So some of our polite officers carry around bouncy balls and things. And if someone's walking along the promenade, they might just have a go and end up playing a little game or something. We did actually work quite closely with Regan Stokes in the Tereo and making Tereo an important aspect of this, because I guess fundamentally we were thinking about active citizenship and what it means to be a good citizen. And polite has a sense of kind of good manners or something, but we kind of extended that definition in our minds of, you know, encompassing whatever it might mean to be a good citizen. And in this place, being a good citizen, I think, has to mean being a bicultural citizen. So we're trying to normalize hearing Tereo on the streets. We've got our five Matapono, our values and principles that we're trying to exhibit and further. We challenge ourselves to make our first interaction with people in Tereo, trying to normalize that and help people understand some of the Te Ao Māori values and principles, and call out good behavior when we see it and give people a badge or a, you know, pat on the back and saying, you know, ka pai tō manaakitanga, thanks for your kindness, or whatever it might be. So that was a project that we were running for about 3 months, and it's kind of due to wind down about now, with an idea that we always had that sort of in the last month we would make a call out for volunteers and see if it could kind of have a life of its own. And we had quite a few volunteers step forward and have been out on the beat with us in the polite force. The Office of Ethnic Communities got quite excited and spread the call out. And so we've had a run of non-Pākehā and non-Māori volunteers, which is nice, a kind of another side of diversity in that sense, and kind of further making people a bit more comfortable. But the amazing thing that happened today, well, we had someone from council bumped into a couple of our officers a week ago, and he's the council's crime prevention head. And he said, oh my God, what are you doing? I love this. This is so good. Give me your contact details and so on, and had a chat with our polite officers, and then rang up and said, could I fund you to continue this? And so we're just having a conversation today. It seems like we're getting a sort of another 6 months worth of funding to keep the polite force going, and specifically the value that he saw in it, which was part of what was in our minds, but not necessarily the central focus, is just a kind presence on the street, establishing some relationships with the streeties and the homeless, who often have no relationships or negative relationships with the local retailers who want them gone or whatever it might be. So establishing some positive relationships there. So that was nice to have someone effectively walk up to you on the street and offer you funding.
Fantastic. So if we're thinking about the kind of vast array of projects you've mentioned, Erica, you touched on things like the number of pairs of feet in the various buildings, and Ryan, you brought up that cool story about funding. How else would you say they've been successful, and how are you kind of assessing that?
I think for me, it's really about looking at different levels of engagement, because, you know, if we think about diversity and how we actually, you know, authentically include everyone that lives or visits the city, we really have to think about all aspects of engagement, and through participation, although, you know, our primary intention is through architecture and discovering a city through architecture, but we're actually exposing them to new areas, ideas, topics, conversations, and spaces to collide with different people. And so I think that for us was a measure of success when we and all of the volunteers saw different people actually visiting and coming out of their homes to experience these behind the scenes, or even just going on a tour, even just popping their head around the corner and realizing a small detail of a window. You know, that level of detail and the length that, you know, we went as a team to go through different scenarios, that was very successful.
From a learning city point of view, often it's harder to see the presence of change, especially if we're having learning days and people are running their own events. So, for example, there were 11 schools that just in their normal kapahaka time during the week invited parents and whānau and community in and used that time to teach them the Te Reo version of the national anthem and just some natural processes. And so we don't have the data on how many people came to those, although we're in the process of collecting feedback. But it's also the stories that emerge from those conversations and the photos and the videos and so on that are shared back with us or through social media. And especially if they've got a focus on equity and moving across boundaries, because for us that's one of our aims, is to have conversations that don't mean that it's just a certain type of people that come to events and have the privilege. That's a much harder thing to achieve, but that's what we'll be looking for.
I think evaluation and monitoring and measuring impact is just one of the trickiest things, especially when you're broadly a humanities space. Yeah, you can track numbers and footfall in open Christchurch. That's a really good indicator that you hit on something that interested people, but kind of trying to map or capture or calculate that longer term impact we've been talking about, or what do you carry away with you? Oh, come on, that's tough. We often just rely on the sort of most significant change model. We find a handful of people who have a good story about a project and you know, what it did to them, for them, with them, whatever. And a few stories like that are worth an awful lot. And partly it's just because the resource to do broad surveys or, you know, whatever other mechanisms you might do, it's just a bit too difficult. Erica said something about the multiple layers, and I see it in Open Christchurch, you know, the different experience of a volunteer who's run one of the venues and kept it open to the public and learned about the building so that they can pass information on or whatever that might be, will have a, you know, qualitatively different experience to a visitor who only attended the event, whatever. And that's true of kind of anything. There's those layers of change or impact.
I think what it highlights for me is the thirst in the city for taking part in these events, and the fact that in Open Christchurch, as an example, and some of the things like our cultural walks, etc., from a learning days perspective, they were full. And the demand was stronger than the possibility of attending an event. That's a good indication that the city is really curious and wanting to take part and learn things. I think that's a great problem to have.
And I also want to mention that as people who love and are passionate about Christchurch, I think we have the best people that are, you know, initiating. And yes, we're taking, you know, movements, but we're also reinventing them to make it our own. And with Learning City and with a lot of placemaking and Gapfill interventions and Pachakucha and even TEDx, Open Christchurch, they're somewhat based on other concepts, but we actually took the time and reflected on what is actually valuable for our own city and readapted it to make sure that people here are engaging with it authentically and meaningfully. So I think, you know, amazing city to be in at the moment. And I always have this conversation with my family about me being an activator. I love immersing myself in Christchurch, whereas other people may choose a city that has already been activated, and that sort of relationship is quite different, and everyone's motivation is quite different when you are in a city that you've chosen. You choose to be activators rather than being activated.
A bit of a statement, bit of a question, really, something that's been on my mind about this hazy area of impact. Because often we're sort of reading the signs. How are people responding? What's the general sense we're getting of people's relationship or reaction to this event or this project, this thing we've put into the world? And say with the Polite Force, we had really positive responses from Christchurch NZ, from the Central City Business Association, Office of Ethnic Communities, a few that obviously saw a lot of value in it. We also had a fair bit of abuse on social media, on the council social media page about the Te Reo, about a waste of time and money and, you know, things like that. And I don't know, we've been reflecting on that. And I think when you are a bit in the business of social change as well, if you had 100% support and plaudits, then you clearly wouldn't be pushing any boundaries if everyone loved everything you're doing. It's a hard one to throw out there, but in some instances, getting a little bit of pushback or criticism I think is a good sign about impact as well. It obviously can also be a bad sign. I'm not too sure what to make of it, but just something we've been reflecting on.
I always think if nobody's criticizing you, then you're not pushing hard enough.
Yeah.
If everyone's criticizing you, it's not so good. But the thing that we've talked about that's in common is the having some clear values and things that we stand for. So I don't think any of us would say, oh, some of them didn't like their speaking in te reo. That's not going to mean that we don't do that, because fundamentally we've all talked about how important that is. So it's trying to get that mix. But I think that pushback is just a normal part of the change process.
We can't please everyone. That's the fact. We try our best to customize and individualize experiences. But if we're able to please everyone, like you said, Cheryl, we aren't pushing the boundaries. And also, if people are always familiar with something, they aren't learning and growing. And so it's about exposing them to new ideas. Yes, they might be criticizing this one thing, and then they spend time to reflecting on that experience, and they may grow without noticing it. So we need to acknowledge what we seem as negative impact may grow into something that will shape them in the future.
Isn't it interesting that so often the impact assessment, frequently because it's tied to some funding and a report that you have to do for funding, we're really pushed to like only include the positive, the people who said, I love it. And the higher the favorability rating and whatever, the better. But it's certainly more complicated than that.
We might have a second song then, which was Erica's choice. You wanted a local Christchurch band, Erica.
Yes, their work is quite close to my heart. They were the first band that played at Gapfiller's Pallet Pavilion that I was volunteering for, and I met the man of my dreams at the Pallet Pavilion, so I actually have to thank the band for that. But they are also a very talented couple with a band called The Response, and so the song that I recommend is 40,000 Day and Night.
I wrap my brain for explanation. I come up empty every single time I try. Keep getting stumped, no clarification. Must I compete with 40,000 day and night? I move further when I look around. It's so strange. I feel these buildings all just look the same. I've gone round in circles all this time. Well, oh no, I guess we never really had a chance.
Ko speaker Korero Tietene. We're talking about activating the city. For our final segment, we're going to be thinking about what are some of the benefits? Why do we want to activate city space? We've spoken a lot about how it might kind of engender some kind of social change, perhaps not immediately, but maybe down the line. But how do we see this kind of social change taking place?
For me, it's about uncovering what already exists and continuing the conversations individually with people close to us, with our organisations and society that really promote deep equity. And so that whole idea of, especially in a post-COVID world, but even beforehand, the equity gap is something that needs to be addressed if we're going to survive and thrive as a whole society. Hence, we're about learning, not just about education, because one of the things that I'd love to see is the continued conversation about Christchurch as a place of learning, not what school you went to. It's breaking down the barriers and the silos that make it much more cross-pollinating and accepting of difference and coming back to that safe place to be.
How about in terms of economy? Ryan, you mentioned Christchurch NZ, for example, well behind the Polite Force. I imagine, bottom line, these sorts of things make the city look good.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. In recent years, we've heard from the council that kind of the central city of Christchurch is done. The retail precinct is done. And, you know, so let's turn our attention elsewhere. And that's true on one level, but I think the retail precinct, can't believe they even use that phrase, is the closest thing we have to a monoculture in the city in terms of the activities that you can do and the people that it caters for. And so we've been motivated for a while about, well, let's bring diversity in a really broad sense, a diversity of activity, things to do that don't cost money, that opens out the kind of range of people who might feel some connection to the central city. So Polite Force, that kind of came out of some of those conversations around what's this just sort of free experience we can put on the streets. And so we were surprised when Christchurch NZ reached out excitedly and great, this is just what we want happening in our city. But I guess that's a good sign that even though economic development is kind of at least a third of and a strong part of their remit, that they're thinking a bit more broadly than that as well.
How about events like Open Christchurch? You probably don't have a sense of how many people, if any, came from elsewhere in New Zealand, but I imagine it's probably one of those types of events that could bring people into the city. And that's obviously got to be advantageous in terms of economics.
We have some data of outside visitors. I also managed a lot of the ticketing side of things, so I can see who have registered for bookable events and venues. And it was very fascinating when you have conversations with, you know, an architecture practice brought 10 of their staff down for a trip to Open Christchurch, and they made a weekend of celebrating architecture and design. And we had the head of architecture school in Auckland come down to experience. So there is a need and also a platform for people to really acknowledge and think about what good design is, and also just to celebrate creativity. Open Christchurch is one of the first type of architecture event in New Zealand. No other city in New Zealand has it. So it does have its benefits in terms of attracting the crowd who already appreciates architecture, but we actually really focus on the local engagement of people who may not think, oh, architecture is for them or good design is for them. It's actually normalizing that conversation of actually good design does improve our lives. And if, you know, we change something small, it can actually make our lives better in our own homes and workplaces and communities. For me, it's really about that and making it, again, accessible and understandable for people.
How about in terms of other benefits? So we've touched on the social and the economic, but there are many, many, many more I'm sure you could talk about. Health and well-being is one that occurred to me. People just getting out and about, first of all, but engaging with people, experiencing new things. Erica, you mentioned at some point, you know, people noticing that little bit on the window, and you take notice as one of the five ways to well-being. So there's lots of well-being benefits that I'm sure these kinds of activities, these kinds of activations are engendering as well.
Yeah, I was talking before about how hard it is to get meaningful data about a lot of this impact stuff. You know, surveys are really resource intensive and so on. But one of the great resources we do have in that respect is the Canterbury Wellbeing Index, the survey that's been happening every year. And we were fortunate enough, I'm still not quite sure how, but a handful of Gapfiller projects were included over quite a few years in the wellbeing survey that went out to 15,000 maybe residents of Selwyn, Waimakariri and Christchurch. That, yeah, that's one of the only like real good data bits that we have. And that awareness, you said take notice or something, but that awareness or connection is just such an important thing to have a space, a thing, something in and about the city that you feel is reflective of you and some and things that are important to you in some way. And I'm spoiled because, you know, our organizations put out a lot of things into the central city, and I get this amazing feeling of, you know, riding around the city and sort of seeing little bits of me or things that reflect me and my values here, there, everywhere. That's an experience that often only kind of business owners, shop owners, developers get going around the city. I built that building, or that's my shop, or whatever it might be. And so to be able to give that experience, at least in miniature, to lots of other people, that's an important thing to strive for.
So I think the challenge is to take that feeling that you have because you've been involved and ensure that there's a diverse group of people that feel that connection. Because I love the work that you do, and because I'm often in round about town, when I see something new, it's like, oh, this is really cool. And so I don't want to lose that sense of transition, that suddenly we've become this thing and the city doesn't change. So I like the new things. The polite force, I haven't seen that at all. So I'm thinking, I've missed out on something. And what I love about that is the sense of play. And I think that's one of the key things in terms of a benefit for well-being, that sense of just lightening mood, the opportunity to play, and even the things that have remained, like the dancer mat. When I go into town on Sundays, usually there's someone there. And I go, look, this is kind of cool. And we might just watch someone or wonder who they are and where they've come from. And I just think we need to keep promoting those sorts of benefits, because we have to create a place that our people, especially our young people, want to stay in or thrive in, and as well attract people from other parts of New Zealand or the other parts of the world as we open up.
I think this made me think of another point about that fuzzy impact space. Actually, I'm working with some people from the District Health Board and Community and Public Health as a creativity and well-being, or art and well-being, international conference being held online next month. But was talking to the woman from Community Public Health who's helping organize that. And she said, in relation to the dancer mat, she's like, you know, I've never been on it, but it's made me happy so many times over. Like, how do you capture that unless you happen to meet this person and have a conversation with them? That's not going to come up in any clicker that you've got or any, you know, survey you do around there. But somehow she sees that as a thing that reflects something of value that's inside her. And so that's a point of connection for her to the city. And I think a lot of what we've been talking about, Open Christchurch and Learning City, is creating so many little moments like that where people feel connection or feel that there's some reflection of them and their values in this place.
I just wanted to add, as part of Learning Days, I was wearing my other hat as a photographer, capturing some of the visual stories. And still very hard when you have, you know, video and photography devices. But it's the conversations that you have with people. You know, I was at the 4C Centre capturing these beautiful Māori rangatahi designing and 3D printing these amazing designs on musical instruments, and the stories they tell, and the vulnerability and the passion they have for their culture, and, you know, walking through the design, you can't really capture that with a digital device, but it's about that human interaction and that conversation starter to, you know, revealing these stories is such another layer of experience, which I had the privilege of being a part of. I don't know where this is taking us in terms of our conversation, but I'm just reflecting on that specific moment where you resonate with someone who you may or may not have connection with, or will have connection with in the future.
I'm not sure it's taking us either, but it was a very beautiful input. It's just a final question from me then, which is, who needs to be doing this activation?
I'd say in a way, everyone. I mean, that's the ultimate kind of democratizing thing, is that everyone's finding some way of sharing the connections that they have. And it can happen at the scale of an event that attracts 12,000 people, but it can happen conversation over a meal about something you did in your day that you want to excite someone else about.
For me, it's reminding me of what you said the start of this conversation, Ryan, about that performance aspect and where you're standing on stage and your relationship with the audience. And, you know, everyone has a role to play as part of an experience or a performance. And so when you're thinking about activating a space or activating the city, everyone needs to be involved.
Yeah, I agree. I think ideally everyone feels that they have a place where they have some sort of influence to activate. And so the challenge for us all is to help people to find their own voices to activate their spaces and not presume that it's our place to activate for them.
Fantastic way to finish up. I think that's given us a good pathway forward, a challenging pathway forward, but a good one. Have you got anything else you'd like to add, though, before we wind this quarter up?
I came up with a really good quote, is that I would invite people to immerse themselves in unfamiliar experiences and use their strengths to participate and learn with others.
Well, I'd like to say thank you so much to all three of you. I think this is a nice, easy topic in some ways, because you're also passionate about it and you're also involved and yourselves activating. But I found this stuff fascinating and I'd really like to thank you for taking the time to talk about it.
Kia ora, thank you.
Kia ora.
Sisye. And to finish off, Ryan, we've got your song, which actually is very opportune given we've been talking quite a bit about the dance and mat in this final segment.
You pressured me to come up with something that related to the topic. A band called Ahori Buzz, a musician who at least lived quite a lot of his life in Christchurch, Aaron Tokona, who actually died of a heart attack last year. But Ahori Buzz song Turnaround is a really upbeat, amazing song with sort of Jimi Hendrix style guitar and incredible singing. And it's become the song that I usually put on at the dance mat when I'm taking people on a tour, which happens a fair bit because it seems to get everyone moving.
And a really nice metaphor, I suppose, for the whole topic we've been talking about in terms of activation. We'll be right back.
sister.